Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the Billboard Sharpie Podcast. Gary Truss, Billboard Senior Director of Charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, a chart manager here at Billboard.
This is where we discuss why what's on the charts is on the charts. And as promised last week, this is our first episode live, well, on tape, from our new Times Square offices in our new, as promised, soundproof studio. We're in a soundproof studio. Well, not entirely soundproof, because if it were, you couldn't hear us. But you know what I mean.
I'm pretty sure they got the hang of it.
Yeah. So we moved a few blocks west in New York. We're basically right in Times Square. Do we get to be in Times Square, or do we have to be in Times Square?
That's a big question. You know, it's the, I don't know, most celebrated and hated part of New York, depending, I guess, on how long you spend around these parts. I mean, obviously, it's very exciting. You know, there's certain times where you look back and you're like, wow, like, there's just so much happening here. And obviously, it's an iconic place. And there's been, you know, legendary pictures and Broadway theaters right there and famous restaurants and 42nd Street. And, you know, Hamilton's playing right there. But, yeah, I mean, of course, like any, you know, great creation, it can be very overwhelming, especially in the summertime when there's so much foot traffic that, you know, it's... Again, the longer you stay here, it's probably I would say, like, the least desirable place to go. I bet if you did a survey of New Yorkers of the attraction they most try to avoid and the subway stop they most try to avoid, yeah. Times Square probably comes out on top,
yeah,
clean.
So I'll focus on the good things. Our new studio is great. We have a new performance space here in our new office. So when acts come in and perform on Facebook Live, it's going to be bigger and better than ever. Highlight, if you notice this, Trevor, in the men's room, we now have an automated paper towel dispenser. No work involved. You don't have to go through all that work of manually pulling it from the dispenser anymore. You just wave your hand over it. Magic. It just comes right out.
Sure. The downside, of course, there's always a trade-off in life, right? When something goes wrong, is that we lose two stalls. So we lost two stalls, so that makes the line that much longer. But of course, now Gary can wave his hand and not touch the dispenser. Worth the trade? I don't know. Sound off in the comments.
Gotta look on the bright side.
Oh, easily pleased. Wow. Wow.
All right. From that lighthearted discussion, this episode is going to be a little bit different. So we were originally planning to do our typical deep chart rundown. There is a new number one hit on the Billboard Hot 100 this week by Post Malone and Swae Lee, Sunflower, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We wound up... For the rest of the episode, we were going to talk about this documentary, Surviving R. Kelly, that premiered January 2nd on Lifetime. And we've been writing some stories about how after that came out and all the very serious allegations about R. Kelly against underage girls, he's back on the social 50 this week. His metrics socially are way up. People are searching him on Wikipedia. His streams are way up. We've written about that. Sales are up. Radio airplay is down, conversely. It's a very compelling case of if you've watched that documentary, there's no way you can watch it and not come away just being totally thinking of the bravery of the women who they speak to. And from a music standpoint, as we're Billboard, we're wondering where does that leave R. Kelly's music catalog is one of the questions. So we booked a couple of guests and we got into a couple deep discussions that we think Yeah, that's what we need to talk about this week. So that's going to be the focus of the podcast this week. If you want to, as always, find out more about chart details, go to billboard.com, the Chartbeat tab. We've got stories again on Sunflower going to number one and a lot more. But this whole podcast, it's going to be all reactions to R. Kelly and where his music stands now. And really, it's going to go a lot deeper than that as well. So we're going to have a couple guests coming up. We're going to start with station in Dallas, KRNB. It's an adult R&B station. Music director Keith Solis. They made an announcement last week that they're taking R. Kelly's music off the station, as well as a co-owned station, KKDA, in Dallas as well, the mainstream R&B hip-hop station. So they're pretty clear about where they stand on R. Kelly's music. We're also going to talk to a couple guests here internally in the Billboard Vibe offices as well, Vibe, our sister site, after Keith. We're going to talk to our own Gail Mitchell, Billboard R&B senior correspondent, and from Vibe, writer-editor Shaniqua Golding, with more perspective as well. So that's this week's Chartbeat podcast. Let's start with Keith Solis, again, from KRNB Radio in Dallas. Keith Solis, thank you so much for coming on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast.
Well, thanks for having me.
The decision to remove R. Kelly's music from KRNB. Let's just start at the top. Take us through how that decision came about.
Well, you know, we've known about the documentary, and yeah, we've heard the stories for years and years and years. But really what led to the decision, for me, I was in church on Sunday and checking my work email, which, of course, is what you should do in church. And so I noticed a lot of emails from listeners wanting to know if we were going to pull R. Kelly's music. What were we going to do about this situation? You know, the girls are it's our first priority, the community, and just all of this. And so after I got home, I was about to call George Cook, my operations manager, but then he called me first and pretty much said the same thing. And so we both decided, you know what, we've got to take a stand. We've got to do something. And so we got on the phone with Claudia Jordan, who's part of the morning show, the Morning Rush with Claudia and Rudy. And, you know, we just all pretty much said the same thing. And it was in that moment that we knew, okay, we're all on the same page. This is what we have to do. And so decided to make the announcement the following day, following morning, which is Monday. And that's how it started. And it was just no question that this was the right thing to do.
And this wasn't just that you wanted to take the music off and sort of quietly, you know, we won't play them, let it be that. You actually came out and made a statement, Service Broadcasting, and really made it very clear how you guys felt. Was that part of it, too, that you really wanted no ambiguity where you guys stood on this?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not like we were playing, you know, 500 titles from R. Kelly. I mean, he's not really one of our marquee artists anymore. And we could have just taken the songs off and gone on about our business. But, yeah, we absolutely wanted to take a stand. The name of our parent company is Service Broadcasting, and that is what we do. I mean, it's part of what we do. We serve, and not only by what we do in the community, but what comes between the speakers. And so we just felt that it was the right thing to do for our audience.
Did you watch most of, any of, how much of Surviving R. Kelly?
Well, the week that it aired, I watched part of the first episode. But it was just, you know, I'm really busy during the week, so I really, you know, don't really have a lot of time to watch television. But this past Friday night, I ended up watching all 6 hours, and it was probably the most disturbing thing that I've ever seen on television. And I think the difference is, you know, yeah, you've heard the stories, you know, down through the years, but when there is a face to go along with the story, I think that makes a tremendous difference, and that makes it real. And this was not just some Lifetime movie where, you know, like the Whitney movie or some of the other movies that we've seen where there are actors and this could be true or maybe it's not. But, I mean, to hear the voices, to hear the stories, and it's not just a situation where there's one young lady against him and it could be true. No, it's a whole bunch of people. And I just can't imagine that a whole bunch of people would just decide, you know what, let's just do this against this guy. I just, you know, can't believe it. I had to just go with what my gut was telling me. And as a father of, you know, a daughter who is the same age as some of those girls who were on that program, it was tough to watch.
You mentioned, you know, something that I think a lot of people are trying to grapple with in terms of we've heard these stories for years, you know, way back from when he and Aaliyah were allegedly married. Was there ever any talk beforehand about R. Kelly, what you should do, or any other artists? Or is this something that was just sort of so watershed that it was the first time it led to a discussion like this inside those walls?
You know, I'm ashamed to say that there wasn't. I've been doing this, I think this is my 34th or 35th year in radio. I remember when R. Kelly was a new artist. I mean, I actually interviewed him when his first single came out. He was in the studio. We'd never heard of him, and met him several times throughout the years, even, you know, with the stories and allegations, and even with other artists who, you know, had similar allegations. And there was never a, you know, should we drop the music? And that's just kind of sad, I think.
What R. Kelly songs were you playing? And you said you weren't playing them that much on KRNB. But
we,
what songs
I think,
were you playing?
Had probably in our entire library at this point, maybe five or six that he actually sang on. In fact, one of the songs that we did pull that he's on is a gospel song from Marvin Sapp. It's called Listen, that R. Kelly actually wrote and produced, and he's on the song. So unfortunately, you know, that was one of the ones that had to go. We did get some people wanting to know if we were going to pull, you know, everything that he's produced. So, you know, do we pull the Janet Jackson remix of Any Time, Any Place, or any of the Aaliyah songs that R. Kelly wrote and produced? Well, we didn't go that far, but we did take off the songs that he sang on, that were actually his songs, or songs that he, you know, had a guest appearance on.
So, like, the R. Kelly vocals basically are
yes.
banned from the station.
Yes.
You said, I thought it was interesting, Keith, you said the word unfortunately, and that was one of the songs that had to go. So is that sort of just the pure music fan in you acknowledging that, and this brings up the whole issue of art versus artist.
The unfortunate part as it related to the Marvin Sapp song is because I'm a Marvin Sapp fan and I'm a friend of Marvin Sapp, yeah. But that's the unfortunate part is that, you know, he kind of has to suffer along with that unless they release a version that does not have R. Kelly on it. You know, we've got to stand by, you know, what we said, whether it's a gospel song or an R&B song.
We've seen this, I feel like, more in pop culture at large over the last year or two with The Cosby Show and Roseanne being pulled from syndication, Louis C.K.'s productions being removed from various platforms online. Now Lady Gaga taking steps to remove Do What You Want with R. Kelly. It seems that when... Even Baby It's Cold Outside, over the holidays, there were stations that banned that because the lyrics could be interpreted a little misogynistic,
now,
even though it was written 7 years ago.
You know, Baby It's Cold Outside, I don't know, I just kind of disagree with that. I mean, that's kind of, you know, I don't know, I just think that was a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, we didn't play that song, so it didn't really matter to me from a professional standpoint. Just from a personal standpoint, I'm just like, really? And I'd actually pulled up the lyrics. Now, I did pull up the lyrics to the entire song, and I guess some of the lines, you know, could be blurred on that, but, you know, I just thought that in that particular instance, you know, perhaps went a little too far. I'm, you know, it's just me.
Well, what's your take on when something like this is suddenly attached to an artist where their whole catalog is suddenly under question and in some ways is removed from various platforms? Is that too close to censorship in your take, or it's probably different for what the platform is? Radio, you're looking for the widest possible audience. You don't want to be offensive, whereas, say, YouTube is more on demand. So it's probably a little different. When you're in radio, you're probably going to lean a little bit more conservative.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just weird. It's different. I think we live in a different age, you know, certainly with the whole Bill Cosby thing and the stations pulling, you know, all the repeats of the Cosby Show. And then I remember, you know, just a few years ago when the whole Confederate flag thing was going out, and then, you know, you couldn't watch Dukes of Hazzard, which was one of my favorite shows growing up. And never did I think that there was anything racist about that. I just loved the show. But because there was a Confederate flag on top of the car, now we can't watch it anymore. It's weird. It's just a weird time that we're in.
And one thing in particular, you know, that you said that drove the decision, obviously, was a big chorus of listeners writing in about this. Since this decision's been made, have you heard from listeners? What are they reaching out and are they supporting? Are they condemning? Or what's the reaction been like?
Well, the support has been more positive. We've gotten, you know, quite a few, you know, negatives on our social media, and that, you know, is another question that came up. Well, do we delete the negative responses? And we decided this is a conversation, and in a conversation, you know, you're not going to always agree. So we decided to leave the negatives up. So yeah, we've gotten some negatives from people saying, well, you know, from you have no proof that he actually did it, to you're trying to bring another black man down. You know, what if they're lying? And, you know, just all of those stories. And so you just kind of have to take that. But we have gotten so many positives saying thank you. And it's interesting. I was leaving work last Thursday, and, you know, we're in a high-rise building, came downstairs and walking across the parking lot and ran into the chief of police of Arlington, which is the city that our station is in. And I kind of know him from, you know, doing different events. And he told me that he saw the story. It ran the night before on one of the local news stations and was just telling me, you know, what a great move it is, not only for the city, but it's just impactful, you know, to the world, to let people know that when you do these types of crimes, that, you know, there's got to be some kind of consequence, whether it's a legal situation or just, you know, losing, you know, your spot on a radio station's playlist.
And one thing I'm curious about, too, you know, you kind of alluded to some other artists earlier who faced backlash. And I think, you know, a lot of us remember the Dixie Chicks on country radio and a lot of up and downs. But it's funny to me that, you know, R. Kelly, it feels like every couple of years we have this conversation again. And for the longest time, it really didn't seem to amount to anything tangible in terms of consequences for him. Is R. Kelly, like, you've been in the business a long time, so I want your perspective in terms of the longevity. Is R. Kelly that artist who, you know, it's almost kind of, I don't know, crazy how consistent this conversation happens with any, I guess, with any other artist who it feels like this conversation in a weird way happens with every other time, but everybody seems to, you know, the pot stirs for a little bit and then it seems to settle down. It just feels like no other artist kind of is in the news in the past 15, 20 years in this same kind of way, same thing every time.
Well, this has been kind of his story, you know, down through the years. And I think there's something different about this time. You know, I mean, even with Bill Cosby, you know, we heard stories about Bill Cosby, you know, over the years, how he, you know, was not a faithful husband and, you know, totally different from the character that he played. But, you know, when everything came out this last time, it was just different. And I felt like something is going to happen in this case. And I feel the same way about R. Kelly. You know, from, you know, just public appeal. I think that at some point through the legal system, he will be caught, he will be dealt with. But when you look at artists like Lady Gaga, who came out, Celine Dion, who, you know, came out this morning, a lot of the mainstream artists, and it's not just R&B, but mainstream America is now looking at this situation. I think, you know, something's going to happen in this. Don't know when, but I believe it will.
And suppose we should also ask, I'm sure he's laying low from all of this, but have you heard anything from the Kelly camp or anybody affiliated with him about this decision?
I personally have not, other than just what I'm reading, you know, in the press, TMZ and what have you, that in fact, I read yesterday that his record label will not release any new music, even though he's still under contract. They have decided they're not going to release any music from him. It was a concert I think he was supposed to do over the weekend, and the promoter ended up pulling out of that. So those are the types of things, but I personally have not talked to anyone associated with him or his record label.
I know it's a heavy topic, unfortunately, which we could have some little more light to discuss, but it's necessary. And, you know, it's a conversation, you know, as we've alluded to, that many people have been kind of trying to wrap their heads around for really decades at this point. And as you mentioned, you know, this is a huge turning point. And obviously, you know, this was, I'm sure, not an easy decision and not a fun decision, but really wanted to talk to somebody who was taking a stand and really, you know, perhaps setting a precedent that I think a lot of people have been waiting for. So,
yeah. And it has been, you know, an interesting, you know, week and a couple of days. And never would I thought that, you know, we would be on the forefront of something like this. I mean, you know, it is, you know, a lot of people say, well, it is censorship. I don't know if I want to use that word or not, but I just think it's just a necessary decision. Will we do that again? I have no idea. This is the first time in my career that I ever recall us pulling anybody's music off the radio. That just never happened.
Well, it sounds like you're following your heart, and listeners, for the most part, are agreeing. So service broadcasting, that's really what it sounds like you guys are all about, in a good way. So really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this with us today, Keith.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the time, and thank you for the opportunity.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, so we just heard the radio perspective from Keith Solis from KRNB. Wanted to get maybe sort of more of the journalistic standpoint, but just opinion from other people who have opinions about R. Kelly and his music and how we view it now. So we've got our own Shaniqua Golding, a writer and editor from Vibe, our sister site. Also on the phone from L.A., Gail Mitchell, Billboard's R&B senior correspondent. Welcome both to the podcast.
Thank you.
Gail, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Shaniqua, from just talking before the podcast, you have some pretty strong opinions about R. Kelly.
Mm-hmm. I think my biggest opinion about after watching the Lifetime 3-part series Surviving R. Kelly, which was directed by former Vibe writer Dream Hampton, she spells her name in all lowercase, is that she is now being met with a whole bunch of legal woes. She has taken to social media to speak. I don't want to say in detail because it's, you know, she can only talk about so much, but I was actually very hurt by it because Dream Hampton was the only one that was brave enough to create this series to showcase, to give the survivors a platform. And now she is being muddied for it. And I think a friend of mine recently told me that when you pray for rain, prepare for mud. And I don't know if Miss Hampton, when she was creating this series, knew how much mud she was going to have to endure. But I think it speaks to just the climate that we're in, that, you know, R. Kelly can do this for years on end, be found not guilty with a tape, be found not guilty with a tape, and then Miss Hampton, she creates a series, a gripping series with facts, and now she's dealing with legal ramifications of it. And I think that's a really sad thing, and I think that we also need to really look at that and see what it says about how this country deals with sexual assault, molestation, and kidnapping of underage black girls.
What was your take on watching Surviving R. Kelly? How much of it surprised you? How much of it hadn't you heard? Or was it, I've heard a lot of this, but hearing it firsthand is very different? What was your take on that?
So I was born in 85 and I'm 33 now, right? So I grew up with R. Kelly's music. I Believe I Can Fly, Bump and Grind, those were all songs that you heard often. And then you began to hear the whispers about Aaliyah. And then you began to hear the whispers about other underage girls. And for whatever reason, it wasn't taken seriously. Well, I take that back. It wasn't taken seriously because misogyny and sexism are very alluring. And they're very, they are cemented in this culture. So that's why I didn't take it seriously. And it takes a very, very thought-provoking and brave person to be able to look at a situation that's been normalized and say, no, this is not okay. So when I saw all of what was presented via Dream Hampton and Lifetime with Surviving R. Kelly, I was not shocked. It wasn't anything new. I think what really did it for me was when I saw Andrea Kelly, R. Kelly's ex-wife, talk about how his actions affected his children. It was just so much to take in. And there are, you know, this series was polarizing for a lot of people. You either opened up your eyes to how many things were okay and you were complicit to growing up in the society, or you were just like, you know, you had your feelings and you remained ignorant. And I think the ignorance that I saw a lot on social media is what really, really bothered me. And I think how we're just so okay with holding women accountable for making or making women the moral gatekeepers for grown men's issues. And that's something that I saw that I didn't like. And I chose not to engage because, like, you know, I'll go back and forth with you. And it's just not healthy for anyone involved.
OK, well, I have a question just to
to start really, I guess, where anybody should start at the beginning, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit, Shaniqua, but I want to ask you and I want to ask Gail, who's joining us from L.A. on the phone. When was the first time, if you can remember, that you heard anything sort of negative about R. Kelly? Because as you mentioned, and Gail, I don't want to, let me know if this is wrong, but I know for myself, you know, grew up in a black household, he always was, you know, kind of omnipresent. There was, you know, the soundtrack, we all heard 12 Play, I Believe I Can Fly. But so we knew the music, we sort of knew the artist before we knew anything about the man. And I feel like for most people, if it had been reversed, if you knew all of these things, that would have colored maybe how you felt about the music, or you would have never listened to the music.
It wouldn't have colored how some people feel about it, because we need to be very honest about the fact that in America, white police officers are very thirsty and lustful for shooting and killing and imprisoning black men. So because of that, oftentimes families are put in a very catch-22 position. We know what the law will do to you. We know what the media will do to you. So we're just going to put you in a back corner, or we're not going to deal with you because I'd rather you stay in this household and potentially infect us with your cancer than me take you to the law and the law deal with you. And there are a lot of black families, not all, but there are a lot of black families who will risk their nieces and granddaughters and baby sisters' mental and emotional and physical lives because they would rather have their pedophile cousin or brother or uncle stay in the fucking back room than bring them to the officer, because they know these officers and these cops love to kill and shoot and imprison their black man. So I don't know if knowing about R. Kelly, the person, would have affected the way he is viewed in some people's eyes, because at the end of the day, protecting black men has sometimes come at the expense of nieces and granddaughters and sisters. Because the minute I grow out of my training bra, all of a sudden it's my responsibility to make sure I don't turn this grown ass motherfucking man on, as opposed to him being a grown ass motherfucking man and not touching me. So I don't know if we knew about R. Kelly and the allegations first, if we still wouldn't be singing I Believe I Can Fly.
I hate to pivot from that straight to Gail, but Gail, any thoughts on that?
Mm-hmm. I think my first real inkling, I mean, everybody knew about the sexual content in his music, but I think it all started with Aaliyah when it was around that time, and folks were wondering just what was going on, were they married, were they not married, and I remember being in the radio room at the time during, it was either 2003 or 2004, the Billboard Music Awards, and we had a radio room where you've got all these different radio stations, PDs, and air personalities there to interview, you know, some of the nominees for our awards show at the time. And R. Kelly was producer of the year, and or top producer. I know he was for R&B and hip hop, and then I think 2003 for the awards overall. But anyway, when he was brought in, the publicist at the time for the label said, you know, don't ask any, yeah, you can ask any questions you want, don't ask any questions about Aaliyah. Naturally, somebody jumped up and I shouldn't say jumped up, but naturally somebody asked that question. And then, you see, I was on the far side of the room, but everybody stops because R. Kelly just jumps up and just stalks out of the room. The first polarizing effects I saw of him, the man, what was going on behind the scenes was right after he was acquitted from after the tape, the infamous tape. And I'm backstage again in the press room, this time for the BET Awards, and the press there in the room was, it was very polarizing. There were a lot of, half of the room was saying they were never going to listen to R. Kelly again, buy his music, whatever, because they felt he was guilty and it was a travesty. And then you had others that were still trying to separate the legacy of his music and his talent from that situation. So that for me was the earliest indications that, you know, that there was more going on.
Well, I also think it's really I think it's also bullshit, right? So, like, you're sitting here telling me, you know, let this man enjoy his legacy, you know, you separate the art from the artist. And that's a very privileged statement to say, because victims can't separate themselves from the pain. You know what I mean? Like, how dare you? Like, and not I'm saying you, Gib, but I'm like, how dare you sit here and say,
no,
you
know, I know.
You know, I just feel like it's not okay. Like, not everything in life is in the gray. Not everything. A lot of life is in the gray, but not everything is in the gray. And this is not gray. You see what I'm saying? This is not okay. R. Kelly married a 15-year-old girl. And I say this as honestly and assertively as possible. Aaliyah's parents failed her, too. Aaliyah's parents failed her, too. And listen, you can own it when you want to own it, but at the end of the day, you did. Because there's no way in hell you should be letting your 15-year-old girl fraternize with a grown-ass man. Not like that. So you failed your daughter, too. At the end of the day, there are so many people...
Before the documentary was aired, didn't her parents come out? The mother came out and said we were there every step of the way.
Her mother did come out. And you know what? That's guilt. And that's guilt. And it is guilt. Mm-hmm. Aaliyah has been gone... Oh, my God. She's been gone almost as long as she was alive. You know what I'm saying? And people still love Aaliyah and they still love her music. And I don't think it's wrong that people still love Aaliyah and still love her music. But accountability needs to be had on all sides. R. Kelly was enabled. R. Kelly absolutely was enabled. And there were people working for him that allowed him to be a predator. And Aaliyah's mother and Aaliyah's parents, they failed her. They absolutely failed her. There's no way in hell I'm letting my 15-year-old daughter hang out with a 31-year-old man. You going to the studio? You mean we going to the studio? Oh, R. Kelly wants me to do, you mean R. Kelly wants we to do what? When you turn 21 and then when you grown, we can talk about it then. But no, Aaliyah's parents failed her.
I think one of the things that came up in the documentary was the allure of celebrity. A lot of the victims we heard from, they knew this didn't seem right in a lot of ways, but... This is R. Kelly. This is one of the biggest artists in the world. And that helps you understand.
He's a talented man. He's a rich man. He has a celebrity. I get it. I completely get it. I totally get it.
As was mentioned earlier, it is a lot to take in. I didn't watch the whole thing. I think I watched the first 3 hours with my daughter, who just turned 25. So we had a long chat because I've tried to, for as long as I've been in this industry, I've tried to teach her and my son, you know, that to take a lot of this stuff with entertainment and celebrity out and everything at face value, that there's, you know, that there's, that's just surfacey kind of stuff. So she and I had a long chat and I've asked her, you know, did I help you recognize certain things? Would you have been aware? And as we said earlier, it is very, I think that's why I couldn't watch the whole thing. They did a great job in terms of getting these women to share their stories, because I got to imagine that was very hard and very rough. And it just, you know, heartbreaking, as also mentioned earlier, you know, you can't take that away. The pain, the hurt, God knows, you know, there's so many answers to be left from just from what I saw. You know, what happened to the 14-year-old girl that, you know, now a young woman, you know, how was she able to cope? You know, the question that we brought up earlier about Aaliyah's parents and where were they in the mix? Some of the people on the show, on the documentary that were interviewed, and the one guy that came back out to Essence and said that the documentary misconstrued his association with R. Kelly, that he wasn't part of the inner circle, but you sat there on the documentary and said you saw this and this and this. So I just hope that it has opened the conversation back up. Certain things need to be done, and we've been saying it, and hopefully this is the moment when it's all going to come together in jail, and we can't keep doing this to our young women.
One thing I think that's sort of interesting about the scenario about all this is I don't want to divorce it from the timing. And, you know, you look at the arc of what R. Kelly's career is, you know, I guess you can always leave room for a comeback. But most people are going to say that, you know, R. Kelly had his run of hits and, you know, that, you know, he's certainly not top of mind anymore. But I know that as this story has come up and down for so many years from Aaliyah through the tape that you mentioned, Gail, in particular, that trial and that tape. Mm-hmm. And you actually said before, one thing that Gail said around that time is, yes, I'm going to quote Gail Mitchell to Gail Mitchell, is no matter what happens at the trial, I think R. Kelly's going to be okay just because his writing and producing talent have remained consistent. I don't think he's missed any steps in terms of bottoming out. And as you mentioned, R. Kelly was such a huge force back then. Is it easier, do you think, for us to have this conversation and sort of condemn R. Kelly because he is not popular and top of mind. Do you think this would affect him in the same way? Because I'm thinking of, in particular, that Spotify announcement when they were going to pull some artists from playlists. And the two artists that they really, or people really gravitated towards were XXXTentacion and R. Kelly. And Spotify had to really reverse course because so many XXX fans could not believe that they were going to do that. They're singling him out. Nothing's been proven. This, you know, sounds like R. Kelly plus 15 years.
Everybody, you know, everybody's looking. I think the conversations about money, what can be made, then you wonder, are the fans, some people might make the argument that the fans of XXX are too desensitized. I think with everything, with social media and different things I never thought I would see, have become, something you see that these kids are, younger kids are exposed to all the time. So, and then with the whole tenor of the times with a certain administration and whatever, it just seems it's, the door is open on a lot of stuff that we really have to reach our arms around and figure out. I think we go through cycles. I think you guys would agree we go through cycles where, we're supposed to, in terms of language, in terms of what was shown, we've gone through it with videos. What's too much to show on videos? What isn't? That's kind of gone out the door. What can be said lyrically? I have this argument with my son all the time. He talks to me about Marvin Gaye and songs like that and how out front they were and how his generation, because he's 23, isn't. So and I tried to tell him, we have this argument about the nuances of Marvin Gaye talking about let's get it on or whatever, but he didn't come out and graphically portray it. I know it's a different time with videos and whatever, but it was the nuance of the language where you paint the pictures. The pictures weren't painted the way they are sometimes in the language and whatever, and the objectification by some in terms of females and whatever. And I just worry about the desensitizing. And I think at the time with R. Kelly, it might have been, he was a hit maker, he's making money, but it doesn't make any difference whether he is or isn't at this point. There's something wrong and it needs to be fixed. And here we are having this conversation because people are tired and it can't go on like this.
The best-selling songs, at least the past week, were I Believe I Can Fly and Ignition, at least were the top two. And I'm trying to, I've tried to wrap my head around what that means, because it's not just by chance that those two songs are particularly, the top sellers and streamers. And I have tried, and I don't know if it's people want to clean themselves,
No. People do not want to clean themselves. So here's the thing. You know how you have comfort foods? You go to those foods and they provide you a certain level of comfort. And oftentimes those comfort foods have a certain memory associated with it. So it's not even that you want that food, you want that memory and that moment back. For a lot of R. Kelly's songs, there is a certain level of comfort and there is a memory associated with it. So a lot of people do not have the emotional bandwidth to separate themselves from the memory that they created surrounding that song. So instead of this man molests, rapes, physically abuses, and manipulates underage girls, so I'm going to disassociate everything that I have with him, I am going to call those underage girls liars. I'm going to say that they want a money grab. I'm going to say that they only want it for the attention. I'm going to say they only want it for the likes. Because not doing that means that my memory and my moment that I created out of comfort was a lie. That's what that means. So the remix to Ignition isn't going to be played at the 100-year anniversary on the March on Washington. Like, get the fuck out of here. You serious? No one cares about that. I Believe I Can Fly. It's a great song, but look what You Are Not Alone, Michael Jackson's You Are Not Alone was about a 17-year-old girl that he got pregnant who had a miscarriage. If that does not cloud the way you hear that song, what are we doing?
So you just said, Shaniqua, that's a great song.
It is a great song.
But it sounds like you personally wouldn't be listening to his music.
I'm not listening to it.
Do you understand other people who do? Is it a personal decision? Is it up to each listener?
It's not. When I say it's a When I say it's a great song, I mean that it was crafted around a great moment. Like, Space Jam is big for people. Like, I have a few, like, writers that I work with. They're, like, younger. They just, like, Space Jam was my life. And you know what I mean? So I understand that connection that they have to Space Jam. But for me, I'm not listening to Sylvester anymore. I'm not listening to Sylvester anymore. I'm okay. I'm good. This is how you make your bread and butter. And you've made your bread and butter off of the defilement of black girls. And it's just not something that I'm really interested in.
Gail, same thoughts for you. How you personally are treating R. Kelly's music at this point?
Like Shaniqua said, there were moments, the whole party vibe in terms of stepping, you know, the dance that a lot of black folks do and still do, and R's music was good for that. To be honest, and I used to like Ignition and some other songs, but to be honest, I haven't played an R. Kelly record. I think I've got a bunch of his CDs there at the house, but do I sit there and I never was one to really sit there and go, I'm going to sit and listen to a whole R. Kelly album. I just didn't. There were certain hits that I liked and whatever, and the stuff that he produced for other people. So it's not the end of the world for me if I don't hear another R. Kelly song at this point. No.
I have two points I need to make. The first is, when you don't become R. Kelly and not have antennas deep, deep within the music industry. You know what I'm saying? So you can stop listening to R. Kelly, but there are some songs by your other artists that he wrote when times got really rough around the trial. He started doing a lot of writing and a lot of producing, and he made a lot of hits. Bump, Bump, Bump. R. Kelly wrote that. B2K's Bump, Bump, Bump. R. Kelly wrote that. That's like some of, like, B2K fans. Like,
you can listen to that song and tell it's an R. Kelly song.
It's an R. Kelly song. He wrote that song.
Yeah.
I think he wrote
Fortunate. Is
Fortunate.
Yeah. Fortunate.
The B2K is interesting because, you know, with them going back on tour.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's really that biggest
that's
hit.
That's one of their biggest hits.
I wonder.
And I think Omarion said that he's not going to be performing that after the tour. I don't know if he said he was going to perform that during.
Yeah, and then he got reamed for that.
Right. If you're going to take a stand against R. Kelly, you got to take a stand against all of his writing and production credits. And I need you to understand that you're going to be separating yourself from a lot of music that you grew comfortable with. But I also want to be very clear about my next statement. There are a lot of people within the black community who are using race as a means of quieting the very real misogyny that occurs within the black community. So let me be very clear. Harvey Weinstein is trash. Woody Allen is trash. And there are a whole bunch of other high-profile white men who are trash. And unfortunately, the way racism is set up, some of those white men have been able to get away with the sexual assault that they have been accused of. And then you have some black men who will say, well, what about Harvey Weinstein? And what about Woody Allen? And if they can do it, no, that's not what we're here for. We're not here to say if a white man rapes, then a black man should be able to rape. We're not here to say if a white man molests a little boy, then a black man should be able to molest a little boy. That's not what it is. That's not our bar of excellence. That's not our bar of creativity. That's not what we're doing here. If a white man rapes, that white man is shit, he's trash, and he deserves to burn in hell. But do not use that as a means of saying, well, if this white man can do it and you sit here worried about this black man, no. If somebody like R. Kelly has been doing what he has been doing for decades, and the first thing you can say is, well, this white man did this, then you are trying to invalidate the victims, these black women who are victims. And it's not cool and it's not right. Don't. I really hate that some people try to use what white men can get away with because they want black men to get away with it at the same time. It's not okay. It's not okay. Like, Harvey Weinstein is trash. R. Kelly is trash, too. Woody Allen is trash. And whoever the next man is that might be getting it, he's trash, too. That's what I'm saying.
So my question is, and I think it's something that Shaniqua had sparked a little earlier when you're talking about, and Gary had mentioned art versus artist a lot, and you personally, it sounds like both of you, you know, have really, active effort to,
from shit.
Okay, well, we made an active effort not to listen to him, but in that question, What do you say to people who either do you think people are deluding themselves into thinking, or is there a way that they can enjoy R. Kelly's music and somehow not be supporting, you know, the man that everyone's alleging that R. Kelly is? Is there anything that you think somebody could do?
Is there any way you can have a cake and not eat the eggs that are made in it?
I mean, I guess if it's a vegan cake, there's no eggs.
But, I mean, but like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, don't you need eggs to make a cake?
So right? you think if you're going, you're all in, and like some might say complicit.
That's how he makes his money. That's where his money comes from.
Well, let's say like maybe like Gail, you own a CD. Like, you know, you own the CD. You already bought it 10 years ago. You know, you played.
Well, I didn't buy it, but well,
sorry.
Well, you know,
sorry.
Here,
hello.
I didn't buy it,
sorry. Excuse me, okay. I'm Gail Mitchell.
Well, let's say you bought the CD or you bought the iTunes download or something that you own, and you can, you know, okay. It's offline, and you know, R. Kelly is not streaming. He's not going to get anything new from it. Is that, you know, is that can you comfortably separate yourself from that? Shaniqua shaking her head.
I know, that's in terms of going and supporting him at this juncture, as I said earlier, no. As Shaniqua and I talked about earlier, there are fans out there who, you know, to go to some of his concerts, I don't know if you ever did. I went, I think the most recent one I went to before the cacophony started getting really, really bad, I think was probably 3 years ago. With all the noise and the hoorah, about, you know, with Aaliyah, because I think what was an anniversary of hers that came up, and the conversation kept going and going, and I think more and more people were talking. But to see these women screaming at these shows, to see him, you know, imitating or you know, sex acts, women would be up there rubbing on him and stuff. And it got to the point, to me, the shows just weren't good because he was doing a whole karaoke thing and he wouldn't sing songs all the way through. It was just, you know, so I stopped going at that point. And I don't know. It's hard to say. I think he was talented? I think he was very talented. You know, of late, has his records done anything, album-wise, whatever? No.
But that's the sad part.
I think whatever mojo he had, even the song with Lady Gaga, I don't think many people were, you know, that enamored of that song. It didn't help either one of them at that point. So, to me, so I think he lost mojo creatively a long time ago. So, and maybe that's karma, because I'm one that believes in karma. You know, can you still play? Do you still want to play one of his records at your party and get the party going? Although the way the kids do parties now isn't the way people did parties back in my day. So that's a whole other separate story. But I don't know. I don't know. Shaniqua, I don't know.
I'm not interested in separating the art from the artist in any way, shape, or form. So that's how I feel about R. Kelly. And I also think that like everybody loses in this situation. The victims have lost tremendously. The fans who were really fans of this guy who now just like, I can't support this. And then you have somebody, mm-hmm. and then you have Robert Sylvester Kelly who could have, maybe, I don't know. To everyone who might be listening who was a victim of molestation or sexual assault, I just want to make sure that you know that I am not condoning anything. But, you know, R. Kelly admitted that he himself was molested between the ages of 7 and 13. And that's a significant time. That's 6 years to be molested. And that begs the question of therapy within the Black community and being able to speak about it and being able to go and be like, listen, this is what happened to me and I want to rid myself and cleanse myself of this. Had R. Kelly gotten the help that he needed, are you serious? We would be able to enjoy his music. But he didn't, for whatever reason.
One thing I'm thinking of, too, is in terms of entertainment. We've seen this a lot in sports the last couple of years. Closer for the Houston Astros, Roberto Osuna, was acquired by Houston for the playoff run, and some serious allegations of abuse against him. We've seen NFL, different athletes, and that same element comes up, sort of similar to can you enjoy an artist's music? Can you root for your favorite team if a person on there has these allegations? It's just more of that ambivalence of how we, as consumers of entertainment, sports, it's not as easy. You can't just necessarily separate it. But I think if nothing else, it's good that we're having these discussions going forward.
But if you, and I know nothing about sports, so if we're going to venture that way, just let me know so I can leave, because I will offer nothing to the conversation. But if you, I want to say back in like the 50s and the 60s, if there was a domestic abuse situation and police were called, oftentimes police would look the other way because it was the thought process of, oh, you know, that's just family shit. You know, like that's just the wife and the husband. That has nothing to do with us. You know what I'm saying? And it's only as of late that when a woman calls and says that she might be being abused, police officers are taking it seriously. Police officers didn't traditionally take physical abuse from husbands towards women seriously. It would take short of death for a woman to be able to file charges against her husband. So that has seeped its way into other areas of entertainment and sports and even in life. So people trying to hit you with this, you know, separate the sports from the athlete or the art from the artist, that has long been a part of this culture. At the end of the day, this society doesn't respect women. You don't respect me. You want me to titillate you. You want me to get your dick hard. You want me to sit on it. You do not want me to have an opinion. You do not want me to tell you you're ashy. You do not want me to. You don't. You don't care about me. You don't. Now, is this all men? Of course not.
Do you feel that it's changing at all with all the dialogue in the last year or two?
I feel like men are scared. That's what I feel like, because they want to respect us, but because they don't want to go to jail, or because they don't want that allegation. It's not a matter of, you know, maybe I should actually like listen to them. It's a matter of like, you know what? I don't want none of this smoke, so I'm gonna do this. But it's not like I really respect you to begin with. That's what I feel.
No, I've talked to female executives in the
women
industry,
executives.
And they say, like you said, Shaniqua, guys are scared. Some of them don't know how to react. They say that friends of theirs have asked them, you know, let me know if I'm doing this or whatever. They are scared. But I think, as you said earlier, too, it's Gary, and Sharver, it's opening a dialogue. On the Today Show this morning, they were talking about the new Gillette ad. Ad campaign. Is this the best a man can get? And then Procter & Gamble, P&G, I guess, has their, you know, Boys Will Be Boys, where they're saying, you know, that whole belief has to change. And in term, and all this in with the goal of improving the relationship and understanding on the male side about how they have been objectifying and disrespecting women, and how it's become ingrained in our fabric, and trying to fix that. So, and I'm trying to fix that every day with my 23-year-old son. And I get the sense from the group of guys that he hangs with that, you know, as they said in the Gillette commercial, you know, these young boys that they're aiming this to are going to be the men of tomorrow. That's how we have to look at, you know, moving forward.
I don't know how much time we have left, so just let me know whenever we have to go. But I also think that we need to take a closer look at how we raise boys, and how in the last 20, 30 years, we have not opened up the window and put some fresh air in this new definition of manhood, especially within the Black community. It's so stifling, and it's so difficult, and it's just like, it's concrete. It's concrete. That's what it is. And nothing. And despite what Tupac said, roses don't grow from concrete, y'all. Tupac was wrong. Roses do not grow from concrete. We need to give boys an opportunity and a space to frolic along the spectrum of life's emotions. I don't know what it's like to raise a white man. I don't have white men in my family. But the black men that I know, you either show that you're angry or that you're funny. That is it. And it's okay to experience these conflicting emotions. I was talking to my older brother, Victor, and he says, yo, now that I'm like 40, like I cry all the time. And I was just like, why? He's like, I don't know, man. I just be feeling it. And I just be getting emotional. And I'm just like, good for you. And he was like, yeah, man, I'm with it. Like it's a certain level of freedom that you're able to just like get that off of you. And it's so detrimental how we raise these young boys. We tell them to man up and we don't even give them an opportunity to express why they feel the way they feel. Like there are grown ass men that don't have the words for their feelings. And that's a problem. That's really a problem.
Yeah, and that's how I tried to, being a single parent, divorce, you know, and basically his dad wasn't in his life, either of my kids. But my son and I was always very cognizant and in terms of, yeah, as you said, Shaniqua, being able to show emotion, being able to cry, it's okay. You're no lesser of a man for crying or feeling a certain emotion or wanting to express yourself. So I made it a point to, you know, men that I thought, that I knew in my family and friends, associates I came up with that I thought were strong role models. I was always very cognizant of you know, tapping them. It does take a village, especially in this day and age, to raise a child. So I use that a lot. I think it was Christmas time. I'm live in a condo, so I'm right next door to another building, and I heard this father, and I could tell that they were black, and I don't know what the little boy did, and he was just walloping the hell out of this kid, and he's crying and hiccuping, and then the first thing the father says is, you know, shut up, you know, you're being this way, shut up. And the kid, poor kid, it sounded like he's 3 or 4, and he goes, yeah, I stop that crying, you're not supposed to be crying, you're a man. And he goes, I can't stop crying, you know, I'm trying, it's hard, you know. And I just thought, wow, you know,
first off, he's 3.
Little
boy's 3,
exactly.
Relax,
we gotta do better here.
He's 3, he ain't, he's not 13.
I'd be crying too,
right? He's not 13, so, he's not 23, he's 3.
Well, there's no easy way to put any kind of there's no need to put any kind of a sunshine wrap up on this discussion, but I think it's just important to talk about all this. And yeah, I'll go back to, that's a good thing that we're doing, is we're at least talking about this. That's got to be hopeful on some level going forward.
Yeah, I mean I hate the circumstances that had to lead to all of this, but if you can't change the past, then certainly change the future. Okay, thank you. Cool. That'll be the ending. Okay, yeah, thank you both for taking the time out to do this. I know particularly it's definitely after hours here in New York for Shaniqua, so...
Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah, thank you.
You out, all right.
Gail, thank you so much as well for taking the time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
I apologize for the cursing.
All right. Bye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.